Hey guys, my name is Casey.
And I'm Daniel.
And we're a married couple who recently started a true crime podcast called Dancy True Crime. That's D-A-N-S-I, True Crime.
I enjoy myself some true crime, so we hope you do too. Come on over and check us out.
We can't wait to see you guys there.
We take turns on who tells the story every week. Our episodes are posted every Monday at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time.
To subscribe or follow, check us out on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and Stitcher.
Oh, don't worry, guys. We have a couple other places here. We are also available on Facebook, TikTok, and the Instagram.
Our podcast is for mature audiences only. See you guys soon. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, I just want to remind you to follow our Facebook page, join our group. It is Dancy True Crime. That is D-A-N-S-I, True Crime. And also, you can hear us on Anchor or Spotify. Please rate us and subscribe or follow and share our episodes. Message us on Facebook. Let us know what you think, what we could change, what we could do better. Do you have anything you want to add, babe?
No, I think you did it. You said it just perfect, so.
All right. Well, we hope you guys have a fantastic week and that you enjoy today's episode.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye. Hey guys, Casey here. I just wanted to remind you that if you want to see our research links or photos that we have, they will be posted on our Facebook page. They are posted at the same time as our podcast on Anchor and Spotify. That is every Monday at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we hope to see you guys there. Warning, the following is intended for mature audiences only. Viewer discretion is advised. Hey guys, I'm Casey.
And I'm Daniel.
And we are Dancy True Crime. We've had a very busy week.
It's been a very, very busy week.
Yeah, we've almost got our fence done. And we got the kids a trampoline for Easter. And yeah, we got a pool we got to set up. We haven't done that yet. So we have a lot going on in our backyard.
Oh yeah. But it's once it's done, it's going to be well worth it.
Yes, absolutely. I cannot wait to have that private space in our backyard for us and for the kids and for the family in general.
Right.
So
you'll let the dogs out, let them run around.
Right. They need that exercise too.
Yes, they do.
So before we start today, I just want to throw out an extra warning. This story that we are doing this week does involve child abuse, child torture, up to and including murder of small children by another child. Person that we're talking about, he did his stuff between ages 11 and 14. So he was also a child. So also for this warning, it also does involve violence, torture, and the killing of animals as well. So be advised, this is going to be a very hard episode.
A few things. First off, you don't mess with kids. Doesn't matter if you're a kid.
Yeah, you don't touch the tiny humans.
Yeah. And then for animals, come on. What kind of animals are they? Is it cats, dogs? Is it?
It's mostly cats.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. So.
And yes, I am a cat dad, so it just.
Yeah. So this one, I have been doing a deep dive for what, 2 weeks now?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. There's so much. And for this case being as old as it is, you would think that there wouldn't be as much, but I literally have pretty much every detail.
Now, have you been just mainly getting all your information from different podcasts, or have you found some online?
There is one main podcast that I have been listening to. Okay. It's on Spotify, and it's called Serial Killers.
Okay.
With that being said,
I guess let's do this then.
So, in Charleston, Massachusetts, in 1859, it was one of the most dangerous places around Boston.
Really?
Yes. And again, yes, I said 1859. That is where our story begins.
Ow.
So, yeah, everything, the main part of it happened in the early 1870s.
Okay.
Jesse Pomeroy was born on November 29th in 1859 to Ruth Ann and Thomas Pomeroy in Charleston, Massachusetts. His father ended up being really, really hard on him. He was a Civil War veteran, a dock worker, and he was a severely abusive alcoholic. And since Jesse was born sickly and with a cleft palate, his father seen that as like a sign of weakness, and he just wasn't as good as his 17-month-old brother, Charles.
That's rude.
Yeah, Jesse.
And that's probably where a lot of this is going to come from then, as we'll get into it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. A lot of what Jesse does roots, in my opinion, from what his father did to him.
And I've noticed that's kind of a pattern that I've seen. It's when the kids get that abuse from the parents or a parent, they'll start getting some of those traits and act on them.
Jesse had become ill as an infant with what they had called humor at the time. Now, when I was looking this up, because, you know, Google is my best friend during this. Because there was a lot of stuff that I didn't understand because things are so different now. I mean, you got to think this was over a century ago.
Right.
So some of the terms and some of the things that they would say, it didn't make sense to me. So I had to use Google a lot. And I did get definitions of a lot of things that most people would not know nowadays just because terms are different.
Right.
So there are four types of humor: blood, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile. And they would be connected to four seasons of the year. Yellow bile was summer, black bile was autumn, phlegm was winter, and blood was spring.
Now, did you ask your mom if she's heard any of this as a current day?
Honestly, no, I haven't. Okay. My mom has been so busy between work and things with my sister's wedding coming up and everything else. It's just...
Gotcha.
She's got a lot going on, so...
Well, if there's anybody else in the medical field out there that... has even heard about this in present day, let us know.
Yeah.
Because that'd be kind of cool to get a little bit more information on that.
Whichever one it was that he had ended up leaving him with like a milky eye. And according to Google, that just means he had like a milky white spot on his eye.
Okay.
Or in his eye. And that ended up being permanent. And that made his family, especially his father and peers, ostracize him. Now, according to Google, ostracize means exclude someone from a society or group. Now, everybody would ostracize him besides for his mother. She absolutely cherished Jesse, and she would constantly tell him like how handsome he was and how special he was, but she couldn't protect him from the frequent bullying at his school. Now, Jesse also suffered from epilepsy, and he seemed to grow really, really fast, so he was really tall. I couldn't find how tall he actually was, but he was growing really fast. He was tall, he had an abnormally large head, and he was hard to understand because he talked kind of funny.
Okay.
And because he had that cleft lip.
Right.
Which I'm assuming they fixed because I don't see it in the pictures of him. Because
I was going to ask if that was something way back then, if they could fix that or if that was like something more modern.
Right, but it doesn't show it in the pictures, so I'm assuming that it was fixed.
Okay.
So he was known for playing really rough and his eye. He was bullied because of his eye, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Basically, he was a loner or an outsider. He didn't have friends. He didn't really have anybody besides his mom. And one day, he had had enough and fled the docks, hoping to find comfort from his father, because, again, his father was a dock worker. Instead, he would be met with anger, as his father was ashamed and embarrassed because of how Jesse looked. And so, he was embarrassed to have his coworker see his son. He ended up forcibly leading Jesse home, where he would then strip him, tie him to a beam, and lash him with a horse whip. He would abuse Jesse like this pretty frequently, so it wasn't anything new to Jesse. He would get drunk, get angry, and then he would beat both the boys. But again, as he found Jesse repulsive, he got the worst of it. In the end, Jesse would end up taking his anger out on smaller, weaker children by bullying them because he liked the power.
And yet again, that seems like that's how it goes. You get bullied enough, you're going to become the bully.
Yeah, I mean,
eventually, and it's just because you got tired of it, and then you're like, okay, well, now I've got the strength. I can go and do something to somebody else.
Right. And, you know, he was taking all of his anger and frustration out on kids and animals.
Find a more healthy way.
Right, right. You know. So, according to Mary Ann Byrne, who is a licensed counselor specializing in child and adolescent therapy, his behavior is common in abuse victims. When left untreated, it can lead to anxiety, depression, social phobias. Some become self-destructive, and that results in dropping out of school, retreating from society, self-harm, and death by suicide. Others become bullies. Now, here is a very important detail in the case.
Okay.
So, Jesse enjoyed reading dime novels. Now, this is something that I had to Google because we don't hear dime novels these days. A dime novel is a short story, but they include violence, gore, blood, sex, and wars. Now, he got into these books before he was even 10 years old.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. That is nothing for a child to be reading, let alone somebody who's under 10 years old.
So where would he end up finding these books?
It honestly didn't say. It just said that he had an interest in it. Now, like, most people would be able to identify with the hero of a story.
Right.
Jesse was able to identify with the villain, who was Simon Gerty. And these books would provide a world for him to get lost in. So here's the story behind this villain, Simon Gerty. As a young boy, Gerty was captured by Native Americans and began to take in their cultures. He later served as a liaison with the British and their allies during the American Revolution. And he had often been painted as an evil renegade or a traitor. Jesse was enthralled by the way that Gerty kept his prisoners of war and the many ways that he would put them to death. The captives were stripped naked, beaten, and branded with burning twigs, and repeatedly shot at point-blank range. They would beg for mercy, in which Gerty would never give them. They would never have enough detail to satisfy Jesse, as he knew real violence thanks to his father. So the stories just made him want to make others hurt just like he did. So this is where he began to look for small animals in the streets, and he would capture them, mostly cats, like, you know, stray cats, take them home, and he would tie them to the same beam that his father had tied him up to and replay the scenes he had enjoyed reading about, and he ended up torturing the defenseless animals until they were dead.
Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, this poor, like, I want to say this poor child, but what he goes on to do and not having any kind of remorse just makes me sick. I understand that he is a child.
But in his defense and playing devil's advocate, it's, in a way, it's not his fault, per se.
It was, right, and the abuse that he endured, you know, even before his brain had, I mean, he's still a child. His brain's not fully functioned or fully
developed. You know, developed, yeah.
You know, and that's just how he was raised, in being beat and stuff by his father. Like, he,
so to a certain degree, he almost doesn't know better, per se.
In a way, yeah, kind of.
Because in today's society, if he had a psychological evaluation, you know, he probably wouldn't even be able to, they would just kind of be like, all right, well, he's not mentally capable of understanding.
Right, they would put him in some kind of a psych ward and
right,
do whatever they could to help him.
Right. But back then, you know, the medicine wasn't there. The help just wasn't there. Right,
but the thing is, even if it was, I don't know that he would have gotten the help that he needed. And
because of his dad?
No. I will explain that a little bit more in depth later. But I really don't think that even if they had medications or the help that he would have needed, I really don't believe that he would have ended up getting it.
Okay, so then
Like I said, I will go more into detail with that later.
Is that going to be in this episode?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it'll be in this episode. It has to do with his mother, not his father, but we will get into it.
Okay.
So, according to Dr. Chris Hensley, professor of criminal justice, many serial killers start killing with animals, which we know that because, right. You know, we listen to enough true crime podcasts that we know that a lot of serial killers start out by killing and torturing animals.
Right.
That's just what they do. But they do this because they feel a sense of rejection from the parents or someone they love. Now, with Jesse, obviously, it was his father and his family besides basically anybody in his life besides his own mother.
Yeah.
Sometimes the rejection is perceived, meaning they feel rejected, but they're really not. And other times it's actually real, which in his case it was. And other than lashing out on the person who hurt him, they begin lashing out on something or someone that they have power over that can't really fight back. Which again is how a lot of serial killers are, even how they start out.
Right.
I'm gonna go ahead and stop. Okay, do you have any questions for where we're at now?
Not yet. I've got sympathy for this poor child because just the abuse that he's gone through, and now he's showing the actions he's wanting to harm innocent animals. He already is abusing animals and just...
Right. And on one aspect, I feel that because of the fact that he is only a child and his brain didn't even have time to develop before he went through what he went through, and he's doing to these cats and small animals what has been done to him, besides obviously the killing of them, but the torturing of them
right
until they die.
I'm not condoning it, but in a way,
right? So like, on one hand, I do feel bad for the kid, but on the other hand, I'm just like, why do you have to hurt innocent animals and innocent kids, which we will get to.
Right. And at this point, though, you shouldn't harm animals. But before he starts starting with the murders, at least he's taking out the anger out on somebody that's not a human. Irregardless, you should not hurt animals. But he's finding a way to take care of...
For now.
For now, yes.
Jesse wasn't only killing the neighborhood cats. His mother began noticing that her beloved songbirds were going missing one at a time. And she did suspect that it was Jesse behind it. But her yellow canaries were discovered by the outhouse with their heads ripped from their bodies.
Gosh, he's pulling an Ozzy Osbourne now.
Ultimately, Ruth Ann, which again was his mother, decided to ignore the incident.
Is that just because that she was afraid of what the father, her husband, would say? Or
so, kind of. She was more or less blinded by the love that she had for her son and couldn't be sure that he was the one responsible because she didn't physically see him do it. That's just, she found him there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She didn't want to believe it until she ended up catching Jesse torturing the neighbor's cat. And she had to face the truth on the animals situation. So she told her boys that they were no longer allowed to own pets, trying to nip the behavior in the bud.
Okay.
But besides for telling him they couldn't own pets, she never really punished him, and she kept his secret because she was scared about what Jesse's father, Thomas, would do. So, yeah, she was also scared of what he would do. Now, here is where it gets kind of hard to feel sorry for him in my book.
Okay.
Just because these children that he hurt didn't deserve what he did to them. And before I start on that part, I want to say it was from 4 to 8, not 5 to 8.
Okay. Because
his first victim was 4 years old.
Now, are any of these kids family members at all? Cousins?
So far, nothing that I have come across is his family members, which kind of in a way makes it worse, but not really. But yeah.
Gotcha.
So Jesse was getting bored with the animals.
And that's how it typically is.
Right.
You get used to the one, and then you're like, you want more. You want to get bigger. You want to get more of the feeling.
Right, right. So he decided that he wanted human victims that he could easily control and overpower. So this brings us to December 26th of 1871 when he was 12, because he started with the animals when he was 11.
Okay.
So he's 12 years old now, and he notices a 4-year-old William Payne playing unsupervised near the Pomeroy home. Which, again, this is 1871, so, like, things were a lot different back then. I wouldn't let a 4-year-old outside to play alone nowadays.
Right.
But back then, it was just the norm. So, with the promise of candy, Jesse lured the small boy to Powderhorn Hill, which everywhere, like, it's called Powderhorn Hill, but everywhere describes this as a mountain, and this mountain was near his home in Charleston.
Okay.
So, once there and out of sight of any potential witnesses, Jesse ended up dragging William into a small shack, and he tied his hands to a beam that was inside. He stripped him naked, just like his father had done to him. He beat and whipped him within an inch of his life, ignoring William's cry for help. When he was done, he left him in the shack, bound and alone. And later that night, two hunters luckily ended up hearing William cry from the shed. And that's where they found the frightened, naked 4-year-old William slipping in and out of consciousness, and he was hypothermic. Because, again, it was the day after Christmas. Yeah. It's winter.
So now, does he survive?
Yes. Everybody, besides for the animals in today's episode, do survive.
Okay.
We're not going to get to the murders until next week.
Okay.
Just because there's so much detail in this case.
Got you.
So... okay. When the hunters tried to touch William to save him, he would scream out in pain, and as his back was covered in welts, bruises, and blood from the abuse that he had endured from Jesse. They picked him up and took him to the police station, and why they took him to a police station and not a freaking hospital, I don't know. But the boy was too frightened and traumatized to describe Jesse to police. And they filed a report, but Jesse essentially got away, at least for now. Meanwhile, Jesse felt power after being able to achieve what he had and felt like he was on top of the world. Inside the shed, he was king and nothing could take away the high that he got from it. But as any serial killer, that high would not last forever.
Right.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be serial killers. But... it lasted for about 2 months before he decided he was going to start craving the power and high again and began to search for his next victim. So, on a cold February day, he set out to search for his prey. And while the adults were staying inside to stay warm, the children were braving the cold alone to play in the snow. And Jesse wore his father's old coat. And he looked like a giant hunter when he approached his next target, which was 7-year-old Tracy Hayden. Now, Tracy had been out having a snowball fight with his friends, and he was simply on his way home.
Okay.
He was just trying to get home. And Jesse stopped him and asked him if he wanted to see the soldiers just over Powderhorn Hill. And Tracy was kind of thrown by Jesse's eye, because again, he had the milky eye.
Right.
But he couldn't turn down the opportunity, as he had several toy soldiers at home, but he'd never gotten to see a real soldier.
Okay.
He figured it would be okay to get home a little late, as, of course, he was an excited 7-year-old. They don't really take that kind of thing into consideration.
Right.
To him, even if stranger danger was really a thing back then, he was 7.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, my 7-year-old, this day and age, is really in tune on stranger danger. But, again, they let their 4-year-olds and 7-year-olds play outside alone, so clearly it wasn't like it is today.
Right.
So, he took Jesse's hand, and he had led him up the mountain to the same shed that he had used to torture William 2 months prior. Same shed. So, once they entered, Tracy could tell that something was off, and he tried to leave. Of course, Jesse's not going to allow that.
No.
He wants to get his fix. You know, doing this to little boys ends up being like a drug to him. He dove it onto him and tied his hands and stripped him. He began to beat and whip Tracy, and he ended up breaking his nose, gave him 2 black eyes, and knocked some of his front teeth loose.
So what made him decide that he was going to start beating on the front side versus just the whipping on the back side?
Well, I mean, I think that just happened when he was just trying to get him
settled down and
under his control.
Okay.
So once Jesse got his disgusting and sadistic desires he was after, he finally stopped. But before he left, he bent down and warned Tracy not to tell anyone. Tracy nodded and coughed up some blood. And Jesse then wanted to make sure that he wouldn't tell anybody, and told him that if he did tell anybody what he had done to him, that he would castrate him.
Oh, gosh.
So he then got up and he left him there. Tracy lay there trembling, naked and freezing for a while. When he was finally able to muster up the strength to get up, he got himself dressed and hobbled home. And of course, like any parent would be, they were completely horrified by his appearance. So they did what any parent would do. They took care of his wounds, got him cleaned up, and took him to the police station. Granted, I would probably just take him to the hospital before I cleaned him up, but that's nowadays, that was then. Things are different.
But it almost makes me wonder, though, if they even were near a hospital or doctor's office, or why do they just keep
like,
going to the police
why do
first?
They just go to the police station? Why are they not taking their kids to the hospital and taking them to the police station? Why? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Because in the mid-1800s, they should have had hospitals by now.
Right. And they did, because some of these kids ended up going straight to the hospital. But I just don't understand why they're taking them to the police station instead of the hospital, because obviously the hospital would get the police involved.
You would think back then.
Right. Of course, Jesse's threat began to play in the back of his head over and over again, and all that he could muster out was that he had brown hair. Again, Jesse was able to get away with another vicious attack. So at this point, Jesse's confidence started soaring. He felt that nothing could stop him and that he could get away with anything, and he had to just wait for the right moment to attack someone again. Now, this right moment would come on May 20th of 1972, when he crossed paths with 8-year-old Robert Meyer. Yeah,
they heard him screaming.
Right.
But otherwise, whose shack is it? Is it just,
I mean, honestly, it didn't say. It was an abandoned shack. That's all it really said.
Okay.
So, at this point, he again stripped, bound, and beat his victim. And by this time, his torture just took on a psychological aspect as well. He started dancing around and laughed and swore at Robert. Now, when he noticed that the swearing made his victim wince, it intrigued him. So, Jesse demanded that Robert repeat the profanities, and when he refused, Jesse began to beat him with a stick. Unable to take the pain anymore, Robert gave in and said what Jesse wanted to hear in hopes that the torture and beating would stop. In response, Jesse beat him harder. Because now, well, you're not supposed to say that. I'm going to beat you for that. Like, make up your damn mind, Jesse.
Right.
So, anyway, this is where, in my opinion, it just gets really, really, really rough. Okay.
Okay, because I know for the first three, it was bad, but I mean, it was.
Well, I mean, this is still the third victim when he, because this is his first escalation after he started doing this to children. So it began to take a sexual effect on Jesse. And he decided he was going to masturbate. And when he was done, he then threatened Robert with castration if he told anybody who did this to him. He then fled and left him to be found a few hours later. It does not say who found him, how he was found, anything like that.
Okay.
So on his way home, Jesse was experiencing a new kind of high because, of course, he escalated.
Right.
So it's going to be a new kind of high every time he escalates. Otherwise, why would serial killers escalate in the first place?
Yeah.
So his torture had evolved into sexual sadism. Now, I've heard of sexual sadism, but I wasn't entirely sure of what it is. So in case any of you are unsure of what sexual sadism is, according to Google, sexual sadism is an infliction of physical or psychological suffering, like humiliation or terror, on another person to stimulate sexual excitement and orgasm. So basically torturing somebody and it makes you want to masturbate. That's sexual sadism. Robert was absolutely terrified, and he ended up only telling the police what was done to him, but nothing about who had done it. And of course, again, this left Jesse free to continue to terrorize Charleston. After three attacks, the parents started to panic, as the investigation obviously wasn't going anywhere, or all they knew that they were looking for at this point was a large kid with brown hair. They didn't know anything past that.
Right.
Because these kids were too scared to say anything. You know, because, I mean, in their mind, they don't understand that if this kid gets caught, you know, he's not going to hurt anybody else. In their mind, if I say something, he's going to come kill me, or he's going to come chop my stuff off, you know? So officers began canvassing the streets, interviewing any teenage brown-haired boys that they had come across, but nothing ever came with it. Unhappy with the investigation, the community formed a vigilante group patrolling the streets day and night. And then the newspapers would then deem Jesse the nickname the boy torturer. Children would end up stop playing outside because they were terrified that they were going to be the next victim. And police would offer a $500 reward to anyone with information leading to the boy's arrest.
And that was a lot of money back then.
Right. So according to Google, because I did Google this, like how much money would that be today? So $500 in 1872 would have been a roughly $11,520.46 in today's money.
Sheesh. Almost $12,000 in today's currency, yes.
That's... Right, so like $500 was a lot back then. So,
yeah.
You know, but I mean, nothing really ever came of it. But rumors did start to circle the town, and people decided that they were going to pretty much make up their own perpetrator in their head. And they started spreading the word that it was a red-haired man with a matching red beard, despite what the police had released.
Not only beat this one, he's going to sexually assault them and possibly masturbate again and then leave them in a ditch somewhere.
He decided he was going to start looking for his next victim. That's what he did.
Of course.
Because everybody's looking in the opposite direction, looking for somebody complete opposite of what he is.
Now I got to backtrack just for a hot second here.
Okay.
All right, so cops are kind of out looking. parents wouldn't let their kids go outside, but now that they're switching it up, why aren't the parents outside at this point keeping an eye on their kids?
It's 1872. I don't know.
Because you can't.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Understand. To me, it's weird that they weren't out there watching them in the first place.
Right. After the first one, I would. Okay. You know, something's happened. Okay. You know, then after the second one, I would definitely be like, all right, we're going to start keeping an eye on our kids more. Either we're going to stay out there with them or, you know.
Right, but not after the third victim completely change up what you want the perpetrator to be and where this even came from. Who freaking knows? It makes no sense. Like, these kids are telling him it was a brown-headed teenager boy. Granted, he was 12 at the time, but, you know, he was a big child with, you know, right. a larger head. So, like, to them, he was a teenager.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So on July 22nd, Jesse decided he was going to strike again. And this time, he tricked 7-year-old John Balch into helping him with a promise of money for helping him run an errand, in which he was all too excited to follow Jesse into the woods because money.
Money talks.
Even when you're 7. So his excitement faded when they reached the abandoned shack and he decided he was going to try to flee because what would a normal person do when they realize something's up? They would try to flee.
Right.
So Jesse ended up pouncing on him and tying him up and stripped him of his clothes. And he wanted to reach his last high. So Jesse whipped John while masturbating.
Oh, gosh.
And when he was finished, he threatened John that if he said anything, he would kill him. So that is 2 escalations in 1 because this time he's didn't stop to masturbate. He did it while he whipped him.
Oh.
And instead of telling him, hey, I'm going to castrate you if you tell anybody, but now it's I'm going to kill you if you tell anybody. So when John was taken to the police, he told them that he never got a clear look at who hurt him.
Oh my God.
When John was taken to the police, he told them that he had never got a clear look at who had hurt him, and police knew that he was the newest victim of the boy torturer. But again, they had no way of knowing who was behind these attacks. So Jesse loved what he was able to do without getting caught, and it only made him more excited for what he was doing. He was now not only able to terrify these children, but the adults as well, because obviously the parents are terrified at this point.
Right. Is he waiting that long because he's still in that high, and then by the mid of the second month, he's like, all right, I got to get this fixed?
Pretty much. That's what I'm getting from this.
Okay.
So... again, he's not only able to just terrify the children, but the adults as well. And, of course, this is going to be a huge ego booster for him. For once, he was in charge every time he took somebody to the shack. Now, again, when he was at home, he was still enduring the abuse from his father. And on a summer night in 1872, Jesse and Thomas got into a violent argument. Jesse stormed out and his father ran after him and his father ended up dragging him back home. And Jesse was absolutely humiliated in front of the neighbors and everything as they stood and watched the abuse. Now, once he got him back inside, he ripped his clothes off of him and beat him with a belt. And again, this was all too familiar to the people in the home. And Ruth Ann, which again was Jesse's mother, decided that this was finally enough.
After enduring this for almost a year.
No, after enduring this for almost 12 years. Because, you know, again, he was being abused by his dad his whole life. And she was the one who cherished him. But why she waited over 12 years to actually say something and do something about it, I don't know. So she decided that she was going to grab a knife and straight up threaten Thomas that if he didn't leave, that she was going to kill him.
Oh.
Yeah.
I give her props because that's...
Yeah, that's something really, very hard to do.
Right. Especially for that time.
Right.
But back then, though, from some of the stories I heard, with some of those ladies, you did not want to mess with them.
Yeah. So this scared him to the point where he didn't even look at her. He just walked out the door.
Good. Good man.
So Ruth Ann ended up filing for a divorce and moved the boys to South Boston. And this is where she opened her own dress shop to support her boys.
Nice.
So the divorce was not the only reason for the move. Ruth Ann began to notice a frightening similarity with the torture of the boys in Charleston and what her son endured.
Oh.
So she feared that her son was the source of the horror, and she ended up keeping her suspicions to herself in hope that getting Jesse away from his father would be a first start and that it would stop.
Right.
Unfortunately, though, for Jesse, this was just a new, bigger hunting ground. No one in South Boston feared the boy torturer, so the kids played outside at all hours. Gosh. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, on a hot, blistering summer day in August of 1872, when he was 12, almost 13, 7-year-old George Pratt walked out his front door of his family beachside home in South Boston. He was eager to soak his feet in the cool ocean water, and when this happened, he was walking along the shoreline just looking for seashells when Jesse approached him. Jesse tapped him on the shoulder and told him that he was in a hurry and needed some help with an errand. You shouldn't be asking a 7-year-old for help to run an errand, period. I mean, obviously, that was just an excuse right. to get the boy to go with him, but you don't ask kids for help. You ask adults for help.
Yeah.
George was kind of hesitant, as Jesse seemed very strange to him. His eye was cloudy, and it kind of scared him, which, as...
duly noted.
Right. Having a 7-year-old, I mean, imagine how Lucy would have reacted to some random kid with a cloudy eye that was a bigger kid coming up to her. She would right. freak.
Right.
Also, he didn't want to abandon his seashells that he had gathered. So, the stranger, which we know as Jesse, told George that he could put his seashells in a nearby boathouse and even offered George a quarter for his time, which for nowadays, that would be roughly $5.99 today. For, yeah, I mean, my niece will do anything for a dollar.
Yeah, she will.
You know? Anyway, upon entering the abandoned boathouse, George began feeling kind of uneasy as it was really spooky there. And when he tried to exit the boathouse, the strange boy with the milky eye blocked the exit. He had a menacing look in his one good eye and had rope in his hands. Before George could even yell for help, the other boy pushed him down and held him to the ground. He took off his belt and beat George with the buckle until he bled, and he danced with glee and then straddled the small child and lifted the boy's arms above his head before puncturing his skin under his arms with a sewing needle. George attempted to protect himself by rolling over, which made Jesse mad. He then bit at his face and his buttocks, which why serial killers like to bite, I don't understand.
Right.
Jesse warned him not to tell anybody before running away. He again has escalated because not only with the needles, because that's a new thing.
Right.
But also with the biting. And it didn't say anything about masturbation in any more of these, but I'm assuming he still did it for the simple matter of that was one of his escalations.
Yeah.
And it was a sexual fantasy for him at that point. So Jesse began feeling godlike in his sick, twisted world. And every time the news published another article about him, he reached a new level as high as it was spreading dread throughout the town. And he loved that. So Ruth Ann began to feel overwhelmed by fears and suspicions. Obviously, when they moved, the attack stopped in Charleston, and now they are starting up in South Boston. So she's pretty sure it's her kid, but she was in denial. So 12-year-old Jesse began to get excited to go even further. And just 3 weeks later, on September 5th of 1872, he was walking down the streets of South Boston searching for his next victim. And this is when he met 6-year-old Harry Austin. And with a promise of money, he lured Harry to a vacant railroad bridge. He bound Harry's wrists and stripped him naked, and he knew that he wanted to inflict the same pain that he inflicted on George with the sewing needles, only this time he brought a knife. After he whipped Harry, he took out the knife and started stabbing him under his arms. He then slashed the back of his legs before mutilating his genitals. Once he was done, he left Harry for dead. After losing so much blood, Harry had no strength to scream. He laid naked and alone, bleeding on the railroad bridge. And he was teetering between life and death. It didn't say who, but someone found Harry and rushed him to the nearest hospital. And afraid that his attacker would come back and finish the job, Harry told the police nothing. Again, he escalated. He mutilated his genitals and he had a knife this time. So Jesse began to feel like nobody could stand in his way and he felt like he was unstoppable. He felt free to continue to hurt more people. Again, with the escalation, it was just another high for Jesse. It's an all new high.
And not only that too, but being in a different city, completely right. Different state too. Well,
no, it's the same state.
Same, yeah. But yeah.
But he couldn't wait to attack again, and he would only wait 6 days before attacking 7-year-old Joseph Kennedy. He bound him at the wrist, whipped him, sliced him, and forced him to wash his wounds in salt water.
Oof.
Jesse threatened Joseph that if he didn't comply with what he wanted, that he would kill him, and then he told him to recite the Lord's prayers. This one's hard. The extreme control and violence was like an addiction to Jesse. He couldn't walk away from this on his own. Now, it doesn't even say when he left Joseph, but obviously he left him because the next thing was less than a week later, again, he convinced 5-year-old Charles Gold to follow him with the promise of meeting soldiers, which, again, he used that in the beginning.
Right.
Walking along the Erie Railroad track, Jesse beat Charles over the head before removing all of his clothes and bounding him to a telegraph pole.
Oh, gosh.
He wanted to try things a little different this time, so he replaced his whip with a larger second knife in place of the usual whip. He then began slashing his face with both of the knives.
Oh my gosh.
As Charles pleaded for him to stop. Yeah. As we know, this only made Jesse want to hurt him more because, you know, it turned him on. Luckily for Charles, Jesse was interrupted by approaching railroad workers and he panicked. Jesse tucked away his knives and ran away in the opposite direction. He didn't even have time to warn Charles not to tell anyone. So the railroad workers were more concerned with getting Charles to the hospital than chasing Jesse, which I understand.
Right.
I probably would be too. Charles described his attacker as a big bad boy with a funny eye. And when asked to elaborate, Charles compared it to a white marble. Now, that was something new that police didn't have, so of course they were ecstatic to have a new lead on the case.
Right.
They asked Charles to accompany them from school to school, hoping that he could point out his attacker, but his parents wouldn't let him. They didn't want him to leave the hospital yet. He wasn't ready to leave the hospital, so why would they want to take him to these schools, you know? They were just like, no, absolutely not. So the police then turned to 7-year-old Joseph Kennedy, but he was still too terrified to say anything. The investigators were extremely patient with him and took their time and were able to convince him that nothing would happen to him or his family and that they would make sure of that. And Joseph finally agreed. So they, you know, and his parents approved it. You know, he was going to be with the police the whole time. You know, he was going to be safe.
Right.
So on a late September afternoon, in 1872, Jesse and his friends were in class engrossed in schoolwork when there was a knock at the door. When Jesse looked up, he was hit with panic. Standing before him were two police officers with Joseph Kennedy.
Oh, here we go.
Wait for it. His heart started pounding and he started thinking about an escape plan, which was, you know, jumping out the open window in the classroom. Jesse was relieved. He had gotten lucky. He wondered if Joseph remembered his threat or simply didn't recognize him as his attacker. Which, yeah, I mean, isn't that what would be going through anybody's head at that point?
Right.
So, Jesse decided that he was gonna not be so smart. He was gonna walk by the police station after school.
Why?
And he was so he had himself so convinced that nobody was looking at him that he did not only walk past this police station. He went inside. He went inside the police station.
To say hello to the nice police
officers?
He just
wanted to see if anybody would try to get after him or whatever. He was, you know. So officers of all rankings ended up walking right past him, not even really noticing him. And at that point, he started to feel invincible. Which, that bliss came to a screeching halt.
Uh-oh.
Because he could feel someone's eyes locked on him. He felt like he was being watched. You know that feeling. Everybody knows that feeling. It's a horrible feeling. So he decided he was going to glance over his shoulder, and that's when the blood left his face.
He got white in the face.
You know why? You want to know why? So Joseph started screaming, "That's him! That's him!" And Jesse bolted, but the officers tackled him and brought him back into the building. And they took him in a room and began questioning him.
Wait, though. He's a minor. I know this is in mid-1800s,
right, this is like 1872, so again, things are different. That might, you know, you think. But they did begin questioning him. And they brought all of the victims in, and one by one, they pointed Jesse out in the lineup. So Jesse maintained his innocence until they threatened him with 100 years if he didn't tell the truth, in which he finally confessed, because obviously he's 12 years old, he don't know any better.
Right.
A wave of relief brushed over the police. At court, his mother was there, weeping the whole time. She watched as child after child confirmed that Jesse was the one who had tortured them and beat them, and she still refused to face the truth. And they gave her a chance to say something. You know, they asked her if she wanted to say anything. And she declared him innocent and said that he was a good boy.
But yet you...
Yeah. Yeah. When questioned by the magistrate on why he did it, Jesse just said, "I couldn't help myself." That's all he said. He clearly was not remorseful, so the magistrate was determined to give him the harshest punishment possible. Now, with him only being 12 years old at the time, and he didn't kill anybody, the court was limited to their options on what they could do for punishment.
Okay.
And he was given 6 years in the Massachusetts State Reform School, and that was actually the first of its kind in the nation. Jesse stood in front of the court emotionless. His mother fought back her tears as she couldn't bring herself to admit that her son was the boy torturer. Magistrate told Jesse that his sentence would be shortened for good behavior, which they shouldn't have.
No.
Because that's what got a reaction out of Jesse.
Because he was back on his high horse, his high. He's like, okay, I'll play nice for a year or two or whatever, and then they'll let me out, and then I can go doing all this and
right.
Then some.
So that got a reaction out of him, and him and his mom only had one shared goal: early release. His mother could not see him locked up for 6 years, but as for Jesse, he simply couldn't wait to resume his torture of the young boys. So that is where we're gonna stop for this week.
And I know, like you said, you've been working on this for so long, and I know you had to take a little break because we had a lot going on, so otherwise we could have kept going. But I feel though that it is best to do it a two-part, because
there's just so much to take in on this that it's really, really hard to try to put it on all in one episode, because it's going to end up being like a 2-hour episode if I do that.
Right.
And, you know, there's just so, you know, just thinking about all the information that we just went over kind of gave me a headache just because it's so much to take in. Because of the fact that there's so many little details.
Right, which they're very important.
Right.
So now on this episode then, let's kind of do a recap. On this episode, how many victims were there?
So in this episode, the cats, the birds, the small animals, but then he also had the 8 little boys that he had tortured.
Okay, and that was over a span, I do believe, of just under a year. Because it started in December and then...
Yeah, just under a year, he had attacked 8 boys.
And with a few of them, they were within a week or two.
Right, less than a week. So, I mean, within 2 weeks, he had gotten to 3 boys.
Yeah, that's just...
At the end there. So, and then his dumbass got cocky and thought he could just walk into the police station.
And he got locked up for now, but as we...
Yes, there would not be a part 2 if that was the end of it. But that was only the first half of it. So, just a reminder, go to ReaperApparelCo.com for 10% off with our discount code, Dancy True Crime, DANSI True Crime. Or if you click on the link in our link tree below, you will get 15% off. For SeekJesus.com, if you put Dancy True Crime, DANSI True Crime, in the discount code box, or if you click on the link down below in our link tree, you will get 15% off. Or we also have JustStrong.com with the discount code of Cash00410 for 10% off. I love the hoodies from Seek Jesus and Just Strong personally. I like the t-shirt from Reaper Apparel Co. And I like the t-shirts from Seek Jesus. They are a completely different kind of fabric. It's kind of different. It's really different. But we gave this t-shirt to his daughter, to Daniel's daughter, Kenzie, and she seems to really like it. So,
yeah.
Is there anything you wanted to add for this week's episode, Daniel?
Nah, you just got me super intrigued, and I'm ready to find out next week what all you have, because just, if you can, just fill me in a little bit. How much next week? Is it going to be more gruesome? Is it about the same? Or
so, next week is where we begin his, because again, he was a serial killer.
Right.
So that's where we begin the killings that he did.
And is he even more cocky, or is he...
You're just going to have to wait and find out.
Dang. Okay.
So, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Not for this week.
All right. You want to remind everybody who we're talking about in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks, we are talking about Howard Unruh.
Okay. Howard Unruh. And who is Howard? Do you want to give our viewers a brief description on what this case is about?
Leave it at this. It was... So, Howard Unruh is... According to the Smithsonian Magazine, he was classified as the first mass shooter.
Okay. So can you tell us how many victims he had or anything?
It was, on 2 different sources. One was saying, I believe it was like 12, and another was like 14.
Okay.
So, but I've got all the information.
Well, yeah,
we'll get into
you're
it.
You're still in the middle of your deep dive too, so.
Right, but it was 14. We'll just say at a max of 14.
Okay. So yes. 12 to 14 victims. Okay.
Yeah. And that one is definitely... Kevin was also saying that, you know, when he did this, that...
He had to take breaks in for them. That's kind of...
There's only been a few cases that they've done that they've had to take some breaks.
Well, there's been a few cases we had to take some breaks too.
Right. So, but yeah, it's definitely one that I'm glad that Kevin had reached out and said, hey, you know, you guys should do this one too. So, but yeah, so we'll, that's who we're going to be talking about here in a couple weeks. Yeah.
Again, if you guys want to request a case, go to our link tree down below and click on request a case, and we will get it added to our wheel.
Because we're still setting pretty good for right now, but it's always nice to have some on the back burner.
Absolutely. And I mean, 90% of the cases that we still have left are stuff that we had picked out too, though.
Yes. You know, let's see if maybe we can find some of the lesser known cases, because I think that'd be kind of nice too.
Cause I really like the lesser known cases.
Yeah, because with these big ones, you know, you you have a lot of people that have already done them, but
yeah,
everybody can do them differently. But yeah, let's try to find some of the lesser known ones. And
which I do have some lesser known ones on here. It's just, but I also have some big name ones, you know, and if you guys add something to it, we add that to the wheel immediately. And that way it's in there. I mean, you could request something now and have it on there in 2 weeks from now.
Right. Definitely.
You know, it's just a matter of what the wheel tells us to do.
Yep.
So.
And if you guys are wanting us to try to get more content, let us know. We will see what we can do. We'll spin the wheel more often. We'll try to pump stuff out because that's definitely our goal. Yeah. You know,
and we've been talking about going with 2 episodes a week instead of one. Let us know what you guys think about that. I was contemplating even possibly putting part 2 out on Patreon a little earlier this week.
Hey, if you
and then next week it'll, you know, you guys can get it. But if you want early release on Patreon, we will do that.
Just let us know what you guys, you know. So, yeah, you can find us on Facebook, you know.
Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Email us at dancytruecrime@gmail.com. That's dancytruecrime@gmail.com. You can, again, message us on Facebook, message us on Instagram. We are both constantly on them.
For me, that's all I've got for this week. What about you, Casey? You got anything else?
Not that I can think of right now. Go join our Patreon.
Most definitely.
Just go to Patreon and search up Dancy True Crime, D-A-N-S-I True Crime, and become our patron. Again, my name is Casey.
And I'm Daniel.
And we are... Hey guys, Casey here. I just wanted to remind you that if you want to see our research links or photos that we have, they will be posted on our Facebook page. They are posted at the same time as our podcast on Anchor and Spotify. That is every Monday at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we hope to see you guys there. Hey guys, I just want to remind you to follow our Facebook page, join our group. It is Dancy True Crime. That is D-A-N-S-I True Crime. And also, you can hear us on Anchor or Spotify. Please rate us and subscribe or follow and share our episodes. Message us on Facebook. Let us know what you think, what we could change, what we could do better. Do you have anything you want to add, babe?
No, I think you did it. You said it just perfect. So.
All right. Well, we hope you guys have a fantastic week and that you enjoy today's episode.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.